Well, folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune. So it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. This is the forums edition of the podcast. I've got the best freaking job in the world. My name's Jim Reed. I'm Bluff Serini in the home game. And I get to hang out here on Monday nights talking with my friends about poker. If you want to find out more about me or the rest of the wrecking crew, because that's what it takes around here. It takes a group, a gang, a crew to make all the magic happen. You can go to rec.poker/crew, but you can just listen up as well, because you're going to meet a few of them right here tonight on the show.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Threads or Twitter, or 5x5 in the Poker Star home game.
And I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere.
And if you're having a good time and you enjoy the podcast, you can thank the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, because they're our sponsor and have been for many years. We couldn't do what we do without them, and we're very grateful for your support, for their support. And if you want to say thanks to them and say thanks to us, you can go to rec.poker/support and find all sorts of great ways to help us out with a review or a like or a follow or a subscribe, or maybe even buying one of us a cup of coffee. So please do head on over rec.poker/support and see what your options are over there. So I mentioned already, this is the forums edition of the podcast, where we take a forum post from the absolutely free forums at rec.poker and talk about it here on the air. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a few hands that Chris Jones himself played recently. And Chris, I won't put words in your mouth. Why don't you kind of introduce the theme for tonight and we'll get right into it.
So I played not that much poker on Sunday, just yesterday. But I ran into this spot over and over again, and it was kind of confounding, which is basically we have opened, been called by an out of position player, very typical bread and butter spot. And we have opened with a big pair in all three cases of the hands we're going to be talking about. We go to a flop and we remain undeterred with our overpair. So we continue, our action, and then we face a check raise from our opponent. And that's where I wanted to start talking about, you know, what is our approach in this kind of situation, and where are we at? And in fact, as I'm looking at these two, just to set the groundwork, we're in tournaments in all of these cases. This is prior to the money, because I did not cash
my condolences
in any of the tournaments I played in. So I know that none of them made the money. And we're not even facing a lot of bubble pressure here. This is sort of in that sort of that phase two of the tournament where it's kind of getting down to it. We're getting close to where reg is closing, but we're not near to where the bubble is going to burst. And in all of these cases, I have between 27 and 36 big blinds. So in one case, I've got 27. One case, I've got 30. One case, I got 36. And I have aces, queens, and jacks. And in all the cases, the board came under those cards, and I got check raised. And now I want to talk about, okay, what's next?
So you're the original raiser. You've been called. And I'm called, in position.
Yep.
And you are c-betting on these boards, which seems like an uncontroversial
decision. And we can talk about, I think we'll talk about the board specifically, because they each have a different dynamic, which I think will be interesting. But let's more maybe start in general before we get to the specific boards that these were.
Well, I think one of the things is, what was your position when you opened? Because the person that's going to be calling you is going to put a different range on you based on your position, right?
Yeah, and that does vary a little bit more. So when I had jacks, I was under the gun. Queens, I was on the button. And aces, I was in the cutoff.
So in the cutoff and the button especially, you can be really, really wide there if you're the initial opener, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the button is almost a 50% range, you know, that you're opening. Well, depending on you know, the types of players in the small blind and a big blind, but that's your standard steal spot where you're going to try to steal with a lot. So the guy in a big blind calling you could just assume that you don't have much, or you could have just about anything.
So in this spot, one of the things that's going to be in common for all the hands is we've made the C bet and we're facing a check raise. And just myself, anecdotally, when I'm in this spot, I feel a lot of tension because I feel like I have a very strong hand. You know, over pairs to the board are hard to get. They're hard to make. They're typically very strong holdings. And our opponent, when they check raise, you know, depending on who they are, they either have a very, very strong holding, a very weak holding, or a balanced range with some semi-bluffs in there and that kind of thing. So I'm for some villains, I know this is a BS answer. Like for some villains, I think you can fold pocket jacks on a 10 high board if they check raise because they're just only ever doing it with a set or two pair. I think like Rob's getting at for some of these other players, especially if you have a wide opening range, they can check raise you with more air or semi-bluff garbage hands that you don't want to fold to. My tension that I feel in this spot is because I like general rules. I'm not that intelligent, so I like to really just follow flowcharts and algorithms when it comes to this kind of stuff. If I three bet when I get check raised, then I'm kind of allowing my opponent to play perfectly against me because they're going to continue with the hands that have an overpair beat, and they're going to give up with the hands that that I'm beating. And I just have that adage in my mind from thinking, you know, the Thinking Poker podcast back in the day, but how you just don't want to do that. You don't want to put your opponent in a position where they can play perfectly against you. But I think what I'm going to learn today is that that's just one of the general rules that you kind of have to weigh. Well, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the interesting things for me is, I mean, this is certainly a move that puts you back on your heels. To talk about kind of Andrew Brokus and that sort of idea of a polarized for and a condensed range. When we start this, you know, pre-flop, we think of ourselves as having a polarized range or at least a value range. And we're hoping to get chips in the pot. And when we get check raised, it is it immediately condenses our holding into something that is no longer extreme value. It still has some value. Like you mentioned, there's still a lot of bluffs and draws in these kinds of scenarios that we are well ahead of. And there's even a lot of people actually will check raise top pair on these sort of low boards. And so we're doing very well against those. So theory, when you look these spots up, like on a GTO wizard or whatever, in most cases, it is asking you to raise this back against your opponent. And so it's really good to listen to theory. It's really good to think about how much are our opponents playing like the theoretical villain here that would allow us to do that. And and if you look at the bluffing range of a GTO player in this spot, like, so let's talk about one of these boards.
Sorry, Chris, but just to nail down the variables one more level. If we are three betting at this stack depth, is it going to be a shove?
We
can get to it. I wasn't sure if there
probably,
was
are actually, I've seen models where you're not, where you're like almost clicking it back. So
all the options are on the table. We're deep enough that it's not that simplified yet. Okay, please continue.
Because, by the way, when we continue here, we're often continuing very small in this spot. So, I don't know. Other thoughts? Do you want to talk about these three specifically, or one of them specifically?
I guess the last thing, the general, like, let's talk generally. The options are going to be fold, call, or raise, and then if you raise, to how much? And then like there's going to be good arguments for all of them. Can we generally eliminate any of them? Like, is calling ever going to be the right decision at this chip stack? Can you call and just like play the run out according to how it runs out and decide and like play poker on future streets?
Okay. Yeah, we have position. I mean, I think there's a strong case for potentially doing that.
No, that's terrible. Because that really just makes our decision harder that there's...
No, that is definitely one of the options.
Right, so we haven't eliminated any of the options off the bat.
No, you can fold depending on the player. You know, it like we always say, it depends, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, let's talk about some specific spots.
Okay.
I already feel uncomfortable, Chris.
So this is interesting because I think we've got three very... Like, kind of, they're all... We all have an overpair on them, but they're all different boards. Okay, so I'm going to start with, I think, the easiest or sort of most sort of like, which is kind of a rainbow board. So we have aces in the cutoff. We've opened, been called by the big blind. We start the hand with 36 big blinds. So we've got 34 behind now, or 34 and a bit behind. The board comes six of hearts, deuce of diamonds, eight of spades. Checks to us. We have the ace of spades and the ace of hearts, if that matters to you. We bet small and see, so we bet about another two big blinds, and we see them check raise to six. And now we have 32 behind with a pot of there's currently a pot of around eight, and plus they you know, I guess it's a pot of 14 really when you count their six.
So what did the solver say about the bet size on the flop?
It likes a really small bet from us with our aces. And this is definitely one where I'll look this up again, but if I remember correctly, it's advocating for the three bet here.
The reason I ask is because it seems like it's kind of a dynamic board, because you could worry about a bigger card showing up if you had a hand like ace-8, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes it very dynamic. Usually in a dynamic situation like that, the pre-flop aggressor would bet a bigger, like 66% to 100% of the pot. Mm-hmm. Is it because specifically aces in this case, because we specifically have aces that we're betting small? Any big bets at all in that?
Let me just pull it up. Keep talking while you're talking, and I'll pull it up
while you're loading that up there. Because I would have said that aces might, on a board like this, aces might be one of the hands that you would bet call, because you're not worried about overcards coming as much. And was it two-tone or rainbow, Chris? I'm sorry.
Rainbow.
Rainbow. It was rainbow.
So
8-6-4 rainbow.
It's 8-6-2. It's dynamic. Oh, 8-6-2 rainbow, yeah. It's dynamic for the like top pair hands, but it's not that dynamic from like a straight or a flush point of view. Yeah, there's the two, you know, there's the gapper out there. Would make me feel like I'd be more inclined to shove a hand like jacks and call a hand like aces, because we just don't care if a queen or a king or something comes.
Right.
Rob, you're actually, you're correct in that we have some big bets in this spot, according to the,
I thought
so,
we would.
Aces is one of those there. It's betting every size. So that's not very helpful.
Okay.
Okay. So it's got like a pot size bet, a half pot size bet, a quarter, you know, a 33% bet, and like a almost like a 10% bet.
Wow,
and
it's doing
all four of those about equally across its range.
Okay.
So make up your mind, right? I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
I
I'm thinking if you do bet bigger there, it's going to you know, it's not going to allow them to do a lot of three betting without them going all in, mm-hmm. or forcing you all in.
Right. And actually, as I look at this, I'm wrong. So this is not what I was misremembering, or it's a different hand I was looking at. So when we get check raised here, it is advocating for us to flat with aces.
Yes. All right.
Yep. I would definitely flat with aces there. Here's the thing. There's no straights. Mm-hmm. All there is backdoor flush draws and a possible straight draw.
Yep.
The only thing you're really worried about here is sets of eights, sixes, or deuces, right? Because they're going to call with any pair.
Yeah.
So or
8-6, I guess. Yeah.
Or 8-6, yeah. But but there's a hell of a lot more hands in his range that do not connect with this, and he's changing his range to be a more polarized range by making that check raise, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're coming back with a more linear range. The fact that we can check with aces means we have not capped our range, right? So we could check with pocket eights too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then let me ask you the next question here. When we do the flat here, which is actually what I did in this hand, is I flatted. So there, now we go to a flop with around 16 in the middle. We've got around 30 behind. So it's about a 2-to-1 stack to pot ratio. The turn is the jack of diamonds. And our opponent bets 10 big blinds
into the middle. We're not folding. Mm-hmm. So we could shove here, or we could call and try and collect it all on the river.
It's totally rainbow yet, right?
Now there's two diamonds.
Right. Oh, okay. There's two diamonds. So there is a backdoor flush and still no straights.
Right. Mm-hmm. Still no straights available.
And you only have SPR of 2. So to me, it seems like a shove.
Just get it in.
Get it in here, yeah. I mean, with an SPR 2, when you have an overpair like that, and there's no, the board is not that connected, I don't know how you can get away from it.
Yeah. Cool. No, I don't think we can. I don't think
that's,
we can get away.
That's what I did. I ran into a set, but that's what I did.
Yeah. Now, I think... And even that's going to be the case for almost every turn that comes, right? Like, I guess you wouldn't want to do it necessarily if the eight pairs, because that's the most likely value hand that our opponent has when they're check raising.
And then also the ones that are a little dicey are like the ones that complete the obvious open-ender straight. So like, so if they've got 9-7, like the 5 and the 10 are not great. Like 8 is the worst card. 5 and 10 are like the next two worst cards.
Yeah. And then even like the 7 is the 7 or the 9 seven, are like they're two pair.
Yeah.
They're two pairing there a little.
Yeah, you're not blocking any of that stuff with your aces, right? So right.
Yeah.
Any 7, any 9, any 5, 7, 9 or 10.
Right.
Or 8.
Really the could jack, complete
the jack
a straight.
Is a really good card.
It's a really good card.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I say at that point
you don't have
a choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's complicate things. So we'll go to the next hand. So now we've got queens. We're on the button. We get called by the big blind. We start this hand with, what did we start this hand with? 27 big blinds. Button calls. Flop is jack of hearts, 9 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds. And we have two queens with no diamond.
We're on the button and the big
blind
called us.
They're in the big blind and they called us.
Okay.
What are the suits?
We have the queen of spades and the queen of clubs. So two black queens. Jack of hearts, 9 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds is the flop.
Okay.
They check. We bet small. I think that's what we did. Yep. We bet small. And we get check raised.
So my inclination.
With the flush draw in play or the two-tone board in play, how does this change things or does it?
So I would probably c-bet to a slightly higher sizing when it's two-tone versus when it's rainbow, but that's a pretty trivial difference. I'm much more likely to shove the flop on this one than I was on the previous one, both because we have we don't want to see aces or kings on the, we've got some protection to bet. And I think our opponent's more likely to have draws because there is a flush draw available, and we want to be capturing value against that portion of their range. And I still think some players are going to make that play with a one pair hand here because we've opened from so late position that our range is very wide to open with, which means our c-betting range should also be very wide. So we're actually pretty close to the top of our range when we get check raised. So that, for a few reasons, this is already a very different scenario in my mind. I'd be much more inclined to three-bet shove or to three-bet to whatever sizing is appropriate, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was a shove.
Now, this is a little more static board. There's not as many cards that are going to change who's got the advantage right now. So I think there's a lot of ace jacks in his range, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you don't, like Jim said, you don't want to see a ace or a king.
Right.
So, but most of those, any card less than a jack is probably not going to bother you too much.
Right.
Other than another dime. Right.
Yep. Right. Well, I'm happy. I'm happy that you're agreeing with me because that's what I did. I shoved here too. Also lost this one when they called and had the third. They got a third diamond on the turn.
Okay.
But you know, I'm happy. That's, I think, a great result. I will take them having a flush draw any day of the week. I'm fist pumping that when I see it turned over in that spot.
Yeah.
And I think the dynamic here is when you see those diamonds there, it become that check raise becomes weighted toward a lot of diamonds in as possibilities in their range. And especially since we're not holding any, it makes our queens even that much stronger.
And especially from the big blind where they're calling with just a ton of suited combos that they wouldn't necessarily be from other positions. They can have almost every combination of diamonds there, which is a ton. That's so many more combinations than their straight draw combinations. You know, like that just makes up a huge part of their value. So it is what you want to see.
Or their pairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not going to have sets as often as they are going to have that flush draw.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do the most complicated one. This is the one that I think I might have misplayed. We have jacks under the gun. We start the hand with 29 big blinds. We open to two, get folds around to the big blind. They call us. Flop is 9-5-5 rainbow.
Ooh.
And we have two jacks. And they check to us. We bet tiny. They raise tiny. They check raise to around we go to two and they check raise to around five.
Oh, two
and it's on us. We've got jacks.
So it's 9-5-5 rainbow or
rainbow.
Two-tone? Rainbow.
9-5-5 rainbow.
So other than like 6-7, 7-8, 8-6, there are no draws here.
Correct.
And this is a board that they should be check raising at a high frequency if they're paying attention, because they have a ton of the fives. And from under the gun, you have like no fives.
Correct.
So
you might have ace five suited. That's
about it. Yeah. Might. Yep. You might.
You should have for your board coverage, but yeah.
Right. And I might have 5-5.
You would, yeah. Now, if it was Taylor playing this.
Yeah, you know there's not a five to be seen.
There's no fives in that range.
So I'd be more inclined to call in this situation, but I don't like it. I mean, there's a lot of overcards that we don't want to see. And our opponent, I'm kind of hoping that we can call here. And then our opponent's going to play more straightforwardly on turns and rivers. And they're not just going to keep bluffing if this is a bluff. Because I think when they check raise and we call, the trouble's going to come on future streets because we have to just, and I think you should call here, and it's perfectly okay to choose to fold on a future street. It's not one of those spots where it's like, well, I decided he was bluffing on the flop, so I just have to call down. That's not true. Shake that out of your mind. So this is the most complicated of the three hands that you put to us tonight, Chris. And I feel like my wanting to call is maybe because it just feels like a simpler decision. I'm not sure it's the right decision, but what I want to do is call and play poker on future streets.
Yeah. And this is the,
Do we have a read on this guy?
Mm-hmm. I don't really, I don't have many.
So we're playing the population. What, how's the population?
Yeah, I've only got 27 total lifetime hands on this player. So,
okay. I think I call.
Yeah. Which is what I did. But this is the chart I was thinking about when I looked it up, and it really likes a raise here. It likes us raising the most with tens, jacks next, then queens, and like you call with kings and aces, but you raise with your tens and your jacks and your queens here pretty heavily. Probably because we don't have that many fives. Mm-hmm. So we don't have, you know, that many that we can actually raise with, but we can get those gutters to fold here. We can get some of their 9x that's maybe raising here to maybe call or fold. Either one seems fine to me. Mm-hmm. But I ended up calling here, which is okay. You can do that sometimes. We've done that. And this one, I want to take us to the turn. So now an ace of clubs comes on the turn. So now there's two clubs. The board is five of spades, nine of hearts, five of clubs, ace of clubs. And there's 15 in the middle. We've got 22 behind. Our opponent covers us, and they bet five big blinds.
See, that card is good for our range as the really end of the con opener. So when they lead into that, that seems even stronger than it might under other circumstances.
Hard agree. But they bet so small.
Yeah.
So
now, are they ever bluffing at that size, or is it always value? And if it's always value, are they not value betting a nine there, right? Are they?
I don't think so. I think this is a five. Or the question I had when I was like, do those gutters that we, because those seem to be the most obvious bluffs here, are like 6-7, 7-8, and 8-6. Do they then bet? If this player's like, this was a pretty big tournament or a pretty high buy-in tournament. So they could be quite good. Do they do this with their fives as well? Like their 5X, do they bet really mm-hmm. small here and just do this now with their gutters? I don't know.
Did they do it? So the one thing that we didn't consider was if they had like a wheel ace pre-flop and they've got the backdoor wheel draw.
Yeah, that's possible. And now they've hit an ace and they've got
now they've hit an ace. Although they might slow down now that they've made top pair bad kicker. Because you're going to have better aces than they are all the time mm-hmm. when you open and you have an ace. You're going to have a better ace than you. So maybe that they wouldn't take that line.
One of the problems with when we call here, we're capping our range, right? Because mm-hmm. now we're saying, well, we don't have aces or kings.
Yep.
Now you could still have ace king, mm-hmm. you know, ace queen, maybe ace king, ace queen type hand, but that's about it.
Yep.
For having a strong hand.
I don't know.
Really, like there are no good turns for us. this is part of the problem, right? Like there's literally
other than a jack would be a delightful jack, turn,
or like a 2, 3 or four, I guess, would be if we don't put them on the wheel, then right.
There are very few good turns for us. This felt like actually one of the better turns that we could possibly ask for, like, and for them to be betting. That's why I was like, I have to call this. And I think this is maybe a mistake. I think I probably should have folded here.
Just
I think
because it was so small, you were thinking I have to defend.
It's like
this
so small. Like, how can I fold this right now here? But I feel like I really, really needed to probably even fold this here after we get check raised. This just feels really milky. I don't know.
Is there, so the more sophisticated, the more experienced the player, the more likely I feel like they are to have bluffs and to do this in a balanced fashion. Is there anything about the situation that makes us feel like they wouldn't check raise a five on the flop? Like, is there, because if they're slowing their fives, which you could do on a board like this, there's also no bad turns for you when you've got 5x here, then this turn bet is a lot more weighted towards those 6, 7, 6, 8, 8, 7 hands. And they can size down because they don't care if you have an ace or not, because they're basically like, just attacking your own air at this point. Sorry, Rob, what was it?
I was just going to say, he's not, if he has a five and he all of a sudden sees that ace show up against an under the gun open, he's going to want to get some money in the pot right now if he's got a five. Because he's thinking, okay, Chris, you know, opened with ace king, ace queen, something like that, ace jack maybe. And that ace is going to help him, and it's going to allow him to put more money in the pot. I got a five here. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make him pay more. So the fact that he went small to me means he's not polarizing. So I think he's got a nine. I just think he's got a nine here. I don't think he has a five, because he'd be betting bigger. I don't think he has a bluff, because he'd be betting bigger. He'd be betting a polarized range with either his fives or his bluffs or his set of nines, his full house, basically. So it just seems that the bet is so small that he's got to be, I think he's betting a nine.
See, I agree that the bluffs would be bigger here, like the gut shots and that kind of thing. But given the stack sizes going into this, Chris, if you call this bet for five, there's going to be like a pot size bet left, or will there be more than a pot size bet left? I already lost the bet.
There'll be, I did call, so I can tell you exactly how many. There'll be 25 in the middle, and I have 18 behind now.
So I think they can bet small on the turn with their fives, because they know it's a trivial call on the river. For the part of your range that's going to call on the river, it doesn't matter if it's 18 or 12. Like, I think it's still, you're calling with your aces. So I think he could have a five. The size of the turn inclines me more to a five. Cause it's a, here's some rope
bet. And again, I would say that if the turn wasn't an ace.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
If the turn was like a 10 or some other meaningless card,
that's a good
then
point,
I would definitely put him on a five. But the fact that it was an ace, I at least from my mind, I would be thinking, okay, I've got trip fives. This guy now has a pair of aces with a good kicker. So he's gonna put money in the pot.
Right.
Let's go.
It does feel like that kind of dynamic where the board's good for you, good for me. Why are you putting money in? I get that.
And the river is sort of, because then the river is just a death card for me. It's an eight, which is completes those gutters that if they are bluffing, completes a lot of them at least.
Yeah.
And he's going to be shoving no matter. I mean, like I'm like, once I call this, I'm like, okay. But I think I was sort of like, I guess I'm going with this, but unless it's a 6, 7, or 8, then I probably not. And it came an 8 and I did end up folding, but I think this is a turn, even how small it is. I don't know. I did this turn when people make these small milky bets. I'm like, well, I can't really fold because I still beat some of their value. But I also feel like when we do this, we just dwindle down our chip stack. Now I've got 17 big blinds. I started the hand with 30. I don't know.
We're also inviting them to shove with their bluffs on the river. Like Rob said earlier, we're capping our range when we call.
Right.
And so a thinking player should take it away on the river there. And they're going to do it on like every river. Like again, there's no good, like you're really in the blender.
Yeah.
No matter what happens. So, and I guess this is why the bots prefer a 3-bet here.
Because
it's just, even in position, this is a terrible spot to play on future streets. Yeah. So we were talking about, and I hate this. I hate this feeling. We were talking about this earlier, and Chris, you were talking about how, like, if we re-raise or something with a hand like this, then maybe they'll fold some of their draws. Maybe they'll call with their top pair hands, that kind of thing. I always feel like I put myself in jail because I can't decide if I want them to continue with second best hands or not. And like, if I'm making an action that they're only ever going to continue with hands that have me crushed, I struggle with this a lot because on one hand, like I said earlier, you're allowing them to play perfectly, which is bad. But on the other hand, you're locking up the pot a lot of the time when they fold. And like winning a pot now that's half the size it could be later is also really, really valuable. Yeah, so is that just a function of our own chip stack? And like we should be more inclined to do that when we're in these spots where we're going to get bluffed off the river in these like 30 to 40... I don't know, 30 to 35 big blind stacks.
It does seem like it. And it does seem like, you know, as I was looking at these spots, the more these boards sort of get to both the paired and the flush draw boards were ones where it liked bigger bets and it liked us 3-betting as the in position player. Versus that 8-6 deuce rainbow board when we had aces, it liked the flat, and it actually liked the flat as I looked at it, other big pairs. It wasn't just aces. It was like
really
kind of, you know, I think like we were maybe raising with like nines and tens or something, but then like jacks, queens, kings, and aces were all just flatting that check raise there. And so
worried about a card coming out bigger than yours.
Right.
That's going to change the.
So, and maybe that's how we want to look at how dynamic is the board and how much do the future sort of turn cards threaten our big pair. So like if we have aces, nothing threatens it. If we have kings, very little threatens, you know, on down.
Right.
And so like the more we're threatened, then the more we want to turn our, and 3-bet against those check raises.
Right. Yeah. You're the old saying, you're betting for protection, right? So when there's a possibility that there's cards that could come higher than yours, you're more apt to want to bet bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to deny equity.
Bet smaller, right? And you bet smaller or play more passively when you have aces and kings than you do with jacks or tens.
Yep. That's a good general rule, and I think that makes sense. And I think the other thing that we can take from this is that you can play more aggressively on the more dynamic boards, the two-tone boards, the flush and straight boards, with all of your holdings, but even more so with those vulnerable overpairs like the tens and jacks on boards like that. I'm still more inclined to play the paired boards more conservatively, because there's especially boards like that where they're paired and it's hard to make a straight and there's no flush draw. It eliminates a lot of the portion of their range that isn't a very strong hand that can check raise like that. There's just fewer semi bluffs available.
So the interesting thing you asked earlier, when we raise, do we shove?
Yes.
And on some of the boards that we were talking about earlier, the clear answer was yes. On that Queens board, when it was a two-tone board, there were two diamonds on the board. It was Jack nine.
Yeah.
That was a clear, like, just get it in.
Makes perfect sense.
But this one, it wants us to raise with jacks, but this is the one where it does not want us to go all in. It wants us to min click. So I think we are raise folding this. Because they have so many fives in their range. In fact, I should just check if we raise.
What are they check raising you with when you look at your solve?
They are check raising with a decent number of fives. They do flat with some fives, but they have a lot of fives in their range. And then they are also, they have a lot of like sevens and eights that make it in there. Mm-hmm. So,
you mean like queen, 7X and 8X?
Like
hands?
Queen 8, Jack 8, 10 8, yep. 10 7, Jack 7. These are the suited varieties because they obviously don't have that many. Those are making it in there. And then there is some 9X. So a lot of their ace 9 makes it in there, king 9, mm-hmm. queen 9. So they have good, a decent number of raises. Hands.
Yep.
But yeah, it's the gut shots, and then it's the ones that block the gut shots. And then those ones, I'm like, what is okay. and then the fives and the nines.
So I think,
well, it's got to find when you're check raising, you're really polarizing your range. So it's got to find some bluffs, right?
Right.
So it's finding those bluffs that block the gut shots, right. The other potential gut shot strikes.
Like, am I that it doesn't seem like it matters that you're blocking my anyway, whatever. But,
oh, yeah, because you're under the gun there, so you shouldn't have
so
any.
So, like,
of that.
Do I have 6-7? I mean, are you worried about that? I mean, or anyway, okay, so when we min click it back here, they
see now they can actually call. With some of their fives and
They're calling with every five
because the step now you're so short relative to the pot, like you can get it in on any future speed.
The only thing they're shoving here is ace nine, and a little
top pair, top
a little bit of 9-8, and a little bit of king queen suited.
Naturally. Of course. Well, they know you have jacks, so they've got a lot of equity with that king queen suited.
But they're calling with every five when we min click it here.
Yeah,
which also doesn't
incentivize the
that is not reality based. Because if I min click my jacks here, and anybody on earth that I play against in most player pools has a 5X here, they're putting it in.
Yeah.
Mostly when we're this short, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the trickiest
one. That's a computer playing against another computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
indeed.
And that's why I'm looking at it saying that the bet that he made, the small bet he made on the turn, it screamed to me nine. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It just screamed to me nine.
Well, it's the only one that I don't know, but I still lost the hand. So I lost all of these hands.
Well, consistency is important, Chris. It's good.
So
I'm glad that you're mastering.
If you think I have a big pair, just check raise me and you're going to win.
Yeah, that's right. Good rule. Good rule. All right. Well, that's really interesting, Chris. So let's just sum up for our listeners. So some of the variables are your opening position, because what that means for your range. The actual value of your hand itself, like how vulnerable to overcards it is on future streets. The board texture and how static versus dynamic it is. And player types that might be more or less inclined to mix it up here. those that feel like, given that we're always in position, we're always with about 30 big blinds, are there any other variables that I missed there when we're trying to decide how to proceed with this kind of stuff? I don't think so.
Well, just so, the player type you're up against.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
You know, is in your mind, is this a thinking player? Is this a studied player? Or is this somebody just over there on the other side of the keyboard clicking buttons?
Yeah. And are those conservative buttons or aggressive buttons? Because if they swing one way or the other, that might be fine.
Are they from Brazil or not?
Yeah.
Or the Russian Federation.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, that was a really good conversation. Thanks, Chris. And thanks for bringing some hands on where you lost. Because, you know, that's where we make our most valuable improvements as players, is by analyzing the spots that we messed up or maybe missed something. So way to go on that. Any other thoughts before we roll on out of here, fellas? Well, then I really want to thank Rob and Chris for their contributions. And of course, to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack and Casino, and Hotel, Racetrack and Casino. Yeah, that's the one. And you, the listeners at home, thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next week on the Rec Poker Podcast. Have a good night, everybody.